Welcome to Sinopinia, the podcast of the Center for International Security and Strategy, CISS, at Tsinghua University. We provide Chinese perspectives with a global vision. I'm Da Wei, Director of CISS, and today we are recording together here in Beijing.
And I'm Shao Yuqing from the Shanghai Institutes for International Studies. It's great to be here in person. We are also joined by Wang Zichen from the Center for China and Globalization. Today, we'll take a closer look at a recent cross-strait development that has drawn wide attention. Ms. Zheng Liwen, the chairwoman of Kuomintang, the major opposition party in Taiwan, visited the mainland, and what it has signaled for the future of cross-strait relations.
Hello, everyone. I'm Wang Zichen. It's so great to be here with you at Tsinghua University. I'm looking forward to a thoughtful discussion on what this visit tells us about, you know, peace, dialogue, and the broader trajectory of the cross-strait relations.
Zichen, let's start from the basics. This visit was explicitly framed as a peace visit, with a fairly full itinerary across Nanjing, Shanghai, and Beijing. Beyond the details, what do you think this framing is really trying to signal? In today's context of cross-strait relations, is it more of a political message or more of a narrative framing?
Well, I think from the very beginning of this visit, Zheng Liwen and her Kuomintang defined it as a journey of peace. This matters a lot. I don't think it came out of nowhere. I think it was a conscious continuation of the journey of peace made in 2005 by then Kuomintang chairman Lian Zhan to the mainland. And it's noticeable that on that visit 21 years ago, Zheng Liwen was the spokeswoman for the KMT delegation. And Lian's visit at the time was a genuine icebreaker in the history of cross-strait relations. Today, against the backdrop of years of suspended cross-strait exchanges, and there is, let's admit it, a severe erosion of mutual trust and widespread and intense regional concern over risks in the Taiwan Strait, I think her visit as the leader of Kuomintang to the mainland clearly also, you know, is very significant. It is aimed to reopen some space for the political communication between the two sides. And I think it reflects the concerns, the interests, and the effort by responsible politicians on both sides of the Taiwan Strait.
One of the key moments was a speech at Sun Yat-sen's mausoleum or Zhongshanling in Nanjing. I think it was more than symbolic. It's actually laid out a fairly structured historical narrative. So Zichen, how do you read that use of history? Is that mainly about shared memory or also about building a kind of foundation for the cross-strait engagement and the peaceful development?
Well, I think we should revisit some of her speech at the Sun Yat-sen mausoleum. She began with the death of Dr. Sun Yat-sen, a monumental figure in Chinese history. She spoke about how people in Taiwan, then under Japanese colonial rule, mourned him. She explained how Taiwanese intellectuals were influenced by the 1911 revolution and Sanmingzhuyi, the three principles of the people. And she extended the entire narrative to the post-war period until, you know, the Chinese Civil War, the February 28 incident in Taiwan, and, Taiwan's long period of martial law. In other words, she did not avoid the wounds between the two sides of the Taiwan Strait, nor did she avoid, you know, some of the heavy chapters in Kuomintang's own history. And I think the significance of the speech is that she placed the cross-strait peace back into a longer historical context. She was telling Taiwan, she was telling the Chinese mainland, she was telling also the international community that cross-strait relations cannot be understood simply as, you know, a geopolitical confrontation, nor merely as some sort of a chessboard between China or the United States or great power competition. It is first and foremost a question for the Chinese people who share a common history, a common culture, and common wounds. And those of us therefore needs a process of reconciliation over the question. Mm. What do you think? That use of history, including, I think she mentioned some of the Japanese element
right.
in that.
Right, that's right. Right. I think through my dialogues, my talks with my colleagues, my friends, most of us were very much impressed by her speech in Zhongshanling. And especially her speech focused on Japanese invasion of China and also colonization in Taiwan. That was a very important part of history and for us to understand the current mainland policy towards Taiwan. But the tendency right now in Taiwan is because of the education, the textbook, especially those history textbook, a lot of younger generation in Taiwan, they don't know the history. And also through our conversation with some American colleagues, European colleagues, you know, right now in some European universities, there was a course named the Taiwan Studies. It was quite interesting that in this kind of course, there's nothing about the Chinese mainland. So there is a tendency of try to rewrite the history, which is quite just kind of a misleading thing. So I think from this perspective, Zheng Liwen's speech mentioning the history is a kind of a reminding to all of us, if we want to have the peace and the stability in the Taiwan Strait, we have to understand the history, have to understand where we come from. And I think another interesting part of the visit is, of course, her meeting with General Secretary Xi Jinping in Beijing. And we have watched a lot of video clips, right, of their meeting. And also, she has got a lot of interviewed when she went back to Taiwan about her meeting with Xi Jinping. So how do you see this meeting?
Yeah, indeed. I think so. At the beginning, maybe 5 or 10 minutes of Chairwoman Zheng Liwen's meeting with General Secretary Xi Jinping of the Communist Party of China, reporters were taking video footage. And I think some of the Taiwanese television was probably live streaming the meeting. And immediately after the meeting, and also they reportedly had lunch together, Zheng Liwen held a televised press conference in Zhongguo Dafandian, like China World region. And after coming back to Taiwan, I see her and also part of her delegation going on all sorts of podcasts and getting press interviews. And also in the process of her visit to the mainland, including her visits to, you know, Jiangsu, Shanghai, and Beijing, the KMT website was constantly updating, you know, publishing her remarks, what she said to the mainland, you know, Communist Party officials. So I do think that that enables a unusually in-depth insight into what was happening, what was said between the KMT and the Communist Party of China. And she was also quite open about sharing or relaying what the mainland officials said during the meeting. So that was indeed quite refreshing, I think.
Yeah, Yuqing, you mentioned just now interaction, your experience of, you know, engaging American and European colleagues. I think, you know, when I have that kind of discussion or reading the Western media, I found there is always a tendency to try to draw parallels between different regional conflict in the world and the Taiwan question. For example, after the Ukraine crisis, we can always hear this kind of question on Western media, basically link these two things together, or even say, today's Ukraine, tomorrow Taiwan. And recently, US and Israel basically attacked Iran, then many people are asking, oh, whether this is an opportunity for mainland China to launch a military attack to Taiwan. So from your perspective, why this kind of analogy-based thinking so common in West? And why has it become such a widespread habit?
I think in general, these days in the West, there is a lack of knowledge about China. And most of the Western countries, those policymakers, they look at the mirror to see a China that in their mind, not the real China, but the China that they want to see. So this is the challenge for all those policymakers in various capital cities in Europe and also in the United States. They, most of them, don't understand the history of the Taiwan question. Like, for example, Taiwan is a part of country. My recent experience in Washington attending a debate related to China is still, you know, Taiwan was called as an independent country. And then most of the observers, they don't understand China mainland's policy towards Taiwan. They think the peaceful unification, our policy, is just like a joke. You know, they still think that the Beijing kind of very easily would use the military means to take Taiwan back. And also they don't understand the strategic culture of China. And just like our leader, top leader, solemnly said that the Chinese people will not kill the Chinese. But most of the Western observers, they don't understand this. And also I would say that was in 2021, Davidson said on the Capitol Hill that in 2027, right, the PLA would use the military means to take Taiwan back. That was a kind of had very negative impact on.
That has really gained popularity ever since, right?
Right.
Sometimes
Davidson
I even
window.
Think that you know, those who, you know, for years argue this 2027 thing, owe us an apology.
Right.
Next year will be 2027, right?
Right. The Ukraine conflict just broke out in 2022, right? 1 year after the so-called Davidson window. So that had also had a huge impact on the thinking of those Western observers, I would say.
Yeah, and let me also follow up on that. You know, the island of Taiwan is home to TSMC, a very important semiconductor company. Mm-hmm. And in Washington today, the Taiwan question is increasingly discussed in terms of semiconductors, supply chains, and broader strategic competition.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yuqing, what do you think? Do you think this way of like linking these issues together, could it be misleading in some aspects, or it? Or how does it fully capture the nature of Taiwan question? From your perspective, like, why do many strategists in the United States and in the West tend to think of that way? You know, my personal answer is, before TSMC gained strategic importance, the Chinese mainland were insisting on national reunification, and the KMT, the Taiwan Island, at the same time also insisted on this as well, right? Why? And you know, Silicon Shield, all these terms, they seem to like a lot of them are framing the Taiwan question overwhelmingly on semiconductors and supply chains now.
Right. I think that's another case can show to all of us that. Most of the Western people, they don't understand our the history of the Taiwan question and also the mainland's policy towards Taiwan. And previously this year, I was in San Francisco attending a closed-door dialogue also on the Taiwan question that the frame of the host of this roundtable was just like through trade dimensions, through technology dimension. I can understand these perspectives because Washington these days just focused too much on the so-called strategic competition with China. And from that perspective, of course, chips is the most important thing if U.S. want to win the want to win the technology competition with China. And also the trade corridor is also another thing, especially after the Strait of Hormuz, right? So I can understand this kind of concerns and perspectives. But back to the previous discussion, that I think our policy, the mainland's policy towards Taiwan and our perspective on the Taiwan question is it's a sovereignty issue. It's a territorial integrity issue. So these are just like two levels, right? They're completely in two different levels. So if the Western countries cannot understand Beijing's perspective, that would lead their policy go into a wrong direction. Right?
Let me make it even more clearer. Like, maybe the mainland has some concerns related to semiconductors, but that must be in the secondary, if not, you know, tertiary.
Right,
okay?
Right.
This is not like one of the major primary considerations when it comes to the Taiwan question, right?
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I think that kind of argument, to be honest, I think is so shallow. I mean, viewing Taiwan question, Taiwan question from, you know, technology and the trade perspective, basically view the island and the 23 million people as kind of instrument. So I think that's very shallow. And actually, in China, I think we view Taiwan question, definitely it's about its history, memory, of course, territory, integrity, and identity. I think these are, you know, Chinese people, the mainland side, view this issue from a very profound and also emotional perspective.
But there is a national sentiment, the 民族感情 behind that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So mention this national sentiments, 民族感情. I think Zheng Liwen is a very different leader, even among, you know, in KMT, I think she is very different. And she has been very clear, 1992 consensus, and she, I think, very firmly said that KMT supports 92 consensus. And also she has been very clear that she said we are Chinese. So Zichen, so how do you think this 92 consensus, why it's important?
Well, I think this is actually quite simple. It's, you know, 1992 consensus is formed within the sort of interactions between the two authorized bodies of the mainland and of the Taiwan Island, respectively, during their consultations in 1992. Basically, it's about one China. And the KMT may say, like, you know, there are still differences when it comes to the one China, but over the years, it has become the political foundation for the two sides to engage in, to maintain political dialogues. In between 2008 and 2016, when the two sides, when the cross-strait relations was in peaceful development, both sides stick to 1992 consensus. There was, at the peak, over 4 million mainland visitors in Taiwan annually. And, you know, there were mainland students in Taiwanese colleges and vice versa. So if you abide by the 1992 consensus, there'll be peace, there'll be more close engagement, prosperity. And since Tsai Ing-wen came to power of the Democratic Progressive Party after 2016, the DPP authorities broke away from the previous administration's promise to stick to this. And that is the reason that why bilateral cross-strait dialogues broke down. And I think it's pretty clear from the Communist Party of China's point of view that, like, whatever you said or did in the past, but if you stick to, if you are willing to go back to the 1992 consensus, we can talk about anything in the future. So this is, I think there is a Chinese language characterization about it in the Taiwan Island, is that this is 通关密码, it's like a password, right? And yeah, that's indeed very important. Yeah.
But the challenge for 92 consensus in Taiwan is that DPP has used the past several years, and also the situation in Hong Kong in the past several years, tried to mislead the Taiwan people to understand the 92 consensus. So it has been a kind of a hidden agenda behind that consensus, which means that the CPC, the Chinese mainland, is going to the United Front work, will try to monopoly the society in Taiwan and try to, you know, to have the one country, two system things. The mainland's policy has been misinterpreted in Taiwan. And a lot of Taiwan people, if they follow the local media every day, they just don't know what is the real policy from Beijing. So I think Zheng Liwen's visit to the mainland, and she publicly said that I support 92 consensus and I am a Chinese. So she helped to break the taboo, political taboo in Taiwan. So I think more and more members within KMT and also ordinary people in Taiwan will gradually understand that 92 consensus is in the interest of the Taiwan people. And if this is the foundation of cross-strait relations, then we will have peace and stability, which is not only in the interest of Taiwan, but also the regional countries. Yeah,
definitely. I think, for example, within the KMT, there were also some politicians who were probably less direct, less forthcoming with the 1992 consensus. But look at the elections within Taiwan for the past decade. Mm. That the sort of ambiguity, the being lukewarm about the idea, that hasn't won their elections, right?
Right, right. It's not helped them, right. Yeah. So just like 92 consensus, there is another concept, which is try to maintain the status quo in the Taiwan Strait. It's also a concept has been debated or discussed, right, in those Western countries.
All
many
be
blamed,
right.
That, try to change the status quo. Yeah.
Definitely very misleading. So, of course, what is status quo? I think this is the very beginning of this discussion,
mm-hmm.
the definition of the status quo. So from the mainland's perspective, the biggest, the most important status quo is Taiwan has been and China is and will be part of China, right? So actually, no matter, you know, if we go back to 1970s or 1990s, even 2000, I think the Taiwan authority agreed with the mainland side that Taiwan is, or both mainland and Taiwan are part of China.
Yeah, an example I'd like to raise is even when the representatives of Jiang Jieshi was evicted from the United Nations General Assembly, they like made a speech that we are the Chinese and we'll come back one day. And that's just got lost in the decades of discussions, especially these days in English, right?
Even in 1972, Shanghai communique between China and the US, it says that the Chinese across the street, acknowledges that there is only one China, believes there is only one China. So definitely the status quo is both sides across the street are part of China. Unfortunately, in past one or two decades, I will say the Taiwan authority has gradually departed from that position and seriously damaged the status quo, particularly the DPP, the current ruling party. I think they, including their leader, basically explicitly say Taiwan is a kind of sovereign state, which definitely ruined or destroyed the status quo. And also at the same time, you know, I think the US side has also, if not changed the status quo, at least hollowed up the status quo. So the US side, for a very long time, have their own one China policy. Mainland side, Chinese side, we disagree with that one China policy. We have the one China principle. But even for that one China policy, I think the US has changed a lot. Yeah, for instance, US sent senior level official to visit Taiwan, including the former speaker, Nancy Pelosi. The US Congress passed many, you know, laws, basically change a lot of, you know, regulations and rules.
About the U.S. State Department officials, how they should engage.
Exactly. Or actually, the U.S. agreed with China in the fourth communique, that's August 17 communique, say U.S. will reduce the amount, the quality and the quantity of the arms they sell to Taiwan, but they broke the promise. And recently, U.S. just announced the largest arms sale package to Taiwan. That's $11 billion. So I think the U.S. side is also changing or hollowing up the status quo. So this hat of, you know, changing the status quo does not belong to the mainland side. I think the Taiwan authority is changing the status quo. The U.S. side is hollowing up status quo, so I urge the two sides to reflect their behavior and not to just blame the mainland side of changing the status quo.
Yeah, there was also the so-called six assurances, which was kept secret for years, but then in recent decades they put it on the table, and that's something Beijing never agreed
actually
to.
Historically there were two versions of six assurance. That's not very serious. I mean two versions. So the US side did not agree with each other what were the six reassurance before the Congress passed it as a law.
Yeah, and also I think this is something so basic that but still we need to bring it up. It's like the constitutional name of Taiwan is Republic of China, and the official map covers the Chinese mainland. There are just so many things that got lost in the current discussion, and in many people's perception that this is just a bigger China, you know, trying to take absorb a smaller, you know, quote unquote country, Taiwan. But there is just so much history before that. And as Yuqing just mentioned, there was the Japanese colonialism, which after their defeat in the Second World War, they were supposed to return it back to China. And what is, in my opinion, one of the largest, the major reasons for the Chinese mainland peaceful reunification policy is that on this side, we do think that it's one family. It's if there is a war across the Taiwan Strait, it will be the most unfortunate thing. And therefore, warfare, you know, military means, non-peaceful means, is the most reluctant choice of the of Beijing. It's not a preferred. Beijing is not, you know, looking and watching. Oh, U.S. is being distracted in Iran, so we can go to war in Taiwan. That's a absolute 100% misinterpretation of the Chinese mainland's position on the Taiwan question. Huh? Mm-hmm.
Yes. So let me move back to China-U.S. relations.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that you know, it was reported that President Trump will is going to visit China very soon, in mid-May. So many people are speculating. A lot of experts discuss that, and some media also covers that. The worry is that, or they speculate that maybe President Trump may say something different from the traditional one China policy on Taiwan when he met President Xi. So Yuqun, how do you foresee this? Do you think the issue Taiwan question will be mentioned when the two leaders meet? And more broadly, how do you view the this change of the Taiwan question with the overall China-U.S. relations?
Yeah. First of all, I hope the President Trump will not postpone his visit to Beijing again. So, and then secondly, if he visits Beijing, of course, from our side, I think President Xi would talk with the President Trump about the Taiwan question. What is our policy towards Taiwan? And would talk to President Trump about, try to remind him at least to be cautious.
As he did with Biden
right,
and other presidents.
Right. Mm-hmm. Repeat our position. Because I think it's quite interesting. Those people in Washington, for example, the last summit in Busan, right? Publicly, the readout didn't mention the Taiwan question. And there would be some explanation from Washington that Beijing did not pay attention to the Taiwan question, which I think was quite wrong. So for the coming summit, I definitely Beijing would again raise the Taiwan question and repeat our policy and our view on the cross-strait relations. And but on the U.S. side, I don't think the Trump President Trump and his team would like to talk with President Xi on the Taiwan question. It's not a priority for him.
He's not a big fan of Taiwan.
Right, of course. And also because right now he is so distracted with the Iran situation. And I haven't seen, I don't know the details. I hope that the two sides are a working team. They are talking about the Taiwan question, but I don't know. So I don't think there will be some real serious thing coming out of the summit. Of course, maybe President Trump will say something, for example, like he opposes Taiwan independence. I hope he said that. But but maybe the next day he will change his words.
Yeah.
That's not that important. I think the most important right now for the U.S. strategic community is to think about the future. Because the reunification is our final goal here. Definitely, it's our goal. So the United States should think about whether it can exist peacefully with a reunified China in the Asia-Pacific region. I think we can. But right now, the perception and mindset in Washington is still trying to be a hegemonic country in the Asia-Pacific region. I don't think if we have the full reunification, Beijing would not try to let the U.S. Go out of this region. Of course, the United States is still an Asia-Pacific country, and it will be in this region for a long, very long time. But I think our two countries can exist peacefully in the Asia-Pacific region. But I think Washington should rethink, change its mindset here.
Yeah, I think the China and the U.S. have been, you know, we have talked about Taiwan question for years, for decades. In 1970s, for example, when we set up the diplomatic relations, that was still the Cold War time. Mm. So many frames of these policies of the two countries regarding Taiwan question was formed during the Cold War period of time. And later, we developed our policies, I mean, from the two sides, during the post-Cold War era. So in 1990s, gradually, the U.S. had have some other policies. But now, we are in a different context now. So we are in a, you know, maybe we can call it a multipolar era or something. I don't know what should be the term. But, I mean, we are in a new order. So I think China and the U.S. need to find some new equilibrium in the in our economic relationship, also in the geopolitical relationship, and on Taiwan question. I don't know where the proper line is, but I think that probably it's time that China and the U.S. should reflect each other, and then we need to talk to each other.
Yeah, I do think there is a discussion going on in Washington, D.C. I'm sure you've come across a recent Brookings Rand collaborated project where there are like different renowned scholars talking about the U.S.-Taiwan policy. There is no consensus on what a new policy should be, but their consensus is the U.S.-Taiwan policy cannot be on autopilot. And there are voices which are clearly trying to restrain the United States. There is a piece over there which says basically the U.S. should think more about the Second Island Chain. And, you know, Taiwan is not a key national interest for the United States. It is risking too much. So I think there is indeed some discussions already going on, at least at the experts level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Zichen and Yuqun, for a very thoughtful discussion. We've looked at this issue from multiple angles today, from the factual details of the visit to its broader strategic implications.
Yes, and perhaps one takeaway is that even in a tense environment, there are still signals pointing toward dialogue and engagement, not just confrontation.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that this visit by Chairwoman Zheng Liwen to the mainland actually adds to the peace, and it also shows that the mainland, the Communist Party of China, has strong confidence where the mainland actually believes time is on its side, and it is not rushing to pick up arms. And I think that would give more room and more space for really wise politicians and strategists to find a peaceful resolving of this issue to keep the region, you know, peaceful and prosper in the future.
Okay, so thank you for listening to Sinopinion, Chinese Perspectives, Global Vision.
For more insights on international affairs, please follow or subscribe to our podcast. Until next time.